Tom Warne. This recording is part of the oral history project carried out by the Suffolk Horse Society in 2013, with advice from Cambridge Community Heritage and a generous grant from the Heritage Lotteries Fund. In the recording, you will hear the voices of Tom and Sandy Warne describing their memories of the Suffolk Punch heavy horse. Tom is a retired agricultural worker, horseman and Suffolk Punch breeder. The recording was made by Peter Webb, who is a member of the Suffolk Horse Society. The date of the recording was 20th of November 2013, and it was carried out at his home in Ipswich. The duration of the recording is about 48 minutes.
I'm here this evening in Ipswich to talk to Tom Warne and Sandy Hewitt, both very experienced Suffolk horse people. And Sandy, thank you very much for inviting to your house. Appreciate that, and all the telephone calls I've made. Thank you, Tom, for letting us come in.
You're very welcome. I'm sure we couldn't fix it up when you first rang up. Different story though.
Would it be possible, Tom, just to ask how old you are, or is that a rude question?
4 weeks from I should be 8.
Okay. And I won't ask you, Sandy. Okay, I'm not, no, I won't do that, my
I'm
darling.
I'm 66, I am. I'm quite pleased that I'm 66.
just to put a bit of spirit into it, at the dinner, we got 3 trophies, and I said that me and my horse were 100, and afterwards Nigel Oakley, you know how humorous he is, he said, because the people on our table told me, so I told him, because the horse is only 2.
All right. Okay,
right.
So.
I was born in 1933, 20th of December, at Low Farm, Westerfield. At that time, the farm was being farmed by Mr. Poole, who also owned, who also farmed Butley Abbey, White Cross Farm, Tunstall, Low Farm, Westerfield, Aitkenham Hall, and was part of the family who owned an estate, Lawford Hall, near Manatry.
Yeah.
My father was living at Butley with his older brother, and was working for Mr. Poole, and his job was the farm wagoner. Right. He drove a pair of horses to a double shaft wagon, and he travelled from Butley to the various farms, like the farm lorry do today. My mother, who was in service at Brumsall Cherry Tree, which was owned by the Carters, who were who people would know recently as being haulage people, but they were haulage people them days, but with horses and tumbles. My mother was in service there, and that's how my father and mother met. They married and come to Low Farm, Westerfield, and lived in the farmhouse. Mother run the vegetable side for stuff to go to Covent Garden, and father did the farming in general.
Yeah.
And carried on, and Paul still had that cows at Aitkenham, 2 herds of cows, and as well as doing what was at Low Farm, father used to go and milk at Aitkenham when they needed someone. And right from a little tot, he used to take me on the seat on his bike to go to the farm, and I used to get my drink of milk straight out the cow, straight into my mouth. As I grew up, we had horses. Mr. Hart took over Low Farm, and father stayed with Mr. Hart, and we had 3 horses and a standard Fords and tractor. But because Mr. Hart had other farms, he got 3 horsemen. He'd lost his land at Greenwich in Ipswich for the housing estate, and he had a man called Bert Andrews who lived in Ipswich somewhere down where the cattle market was. He also had Brewery Farm, Westerfield, and the horseman there was Harry Davy, a lovely little man, who used to say regular, You've got to eat a peck of dirt before you die. Oh, right. And another man, Bob Ward. Bob Ward was a breeches and buskins man, and he drove the tractor. Right. Eventually, Bob left and went to Leslie Miller's father's at Pettistry to look after their Suffolks, and that's where he was till Mr. Miller died and they parted up.
Was that after the Second World War? This the Forge Tractor, yeah. Would that be just after the Second
that
World War?
That was after the Second World War when he was there. Because in the 50s, while I was in the army, we're jumping forward a bit now, but in the 50s, when I was in the army, I remember going out to sea, bike out, because Bob Wood's son and me were mates as kids, and I used to bike out to Sutton to see him, and I did that as well when I was in the army.
Right.
So I was actually brought up with horses.
Right.
I don't know how old I was, but I used to ride trace horse as a youngster. That's not very clever, because once the horses them days were working all the time, and once you'd gone to the muck hill once, they'd very nearly go on their own.
Yeah.
But I used to ride trace horse, that used to relieve a man. I've also can remember as a little one sitting on the potato spinner with two horses pulling it. Bob Ward was one end of the field picking up potatoes, Bert Andrews t'other end of the field picking up potatoes, and I could take you to that particular field now, that's farmed by the Partridge family. And they used to turn the horses round and put them in the next row and say, giddy up, and all sit down here to rain. Nothing clever about it at all, but I done it.
Yes.
And all through the war, I took the horses to the blacksmiths. I used to stick me on a horse in the yard at Westerfield. At the beginning, we used to go to Tuddenham blacksmiths, so I could go up the fields, cross Westerfield Road, cross the fields again, out onto Moss Lane to the blacksmiths. He'd take me off, shoe the horse, put me back on and send me home. When the old boy there shot himself in the Home Guard, the blacksmith shot himself, we then had to go to Rushmere. And I remember where the prefabs are at Rushmere now, I saw my first combine ever working on that field where the prefabs are. And we used to go to Rufus Cracknell at the blacksmith shop at Rushmere.
So roughly what year is this now, Tom, with the first combine, roughly what year?
I would think still in the war.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah,
I would think in the war.
Yes, okay.
In the wartime, if we get north horses a bit,
yeah.
We were next, the farmhouse was a small meadow away from Westerfield School. And the school had a shelter. And we spent lots and lots of time sleeping in the shelter in the school, going there at night with all our gear, coming out in the morning when we finished.
Right.
Although we had an Anderson shelter in the garden. All through the war, father had an old single cylinder engine that used to blump Pete up with a blow lamp to get going. Drove a shaft right through the barn, which drove various equipment, a chaff cutter in the loft, a mill in downstairs and a grinder, and then a big chopper and a saw bench that father made out of an old beet cutter frame.
Right.
And in the wartime, your engines to be going sometimes all night, because all the little people who kept a few pigs would say, can we have a bag of meal, George? Can we have some meal? Can we have this? And that's how we went on.
Yeah.
As I say, Bert Andrews was the horseman, George Davey was his sort of second man, and then Bob drove the tractor. But then when Bob left the tractor, Curly Thorogood took over. They used to tell me stories that, because Mother was out in the vegetables, she used to take me out in the pram and that, but when I got so I could toddle about, the blokes used to go off hedging then and ditching in the winter time, and they used to pull a bundle of straw to take out to light the fire and that with, and they said many a time I've curled up in the bundle of straw and slept while they've been at work. It just went on. The last horse on the farm was still there during the war, during my army time, because I've got a picture somewhere with me with that was a black sort the Shire Cross, Persian Cross, on the meadow in my army uniform. So that was somewhere between 52 and 55.
So you're telling us stories of the changeover from the horse gradually to the tractor, aren't you?
Yeah.
But those early days then, you didn't just leave the horses behind forever, did you?
No.
Since then, you've got involved with the Suffolk especially, haven't you?
And I met Sandy. She'd always had ponies to hunt. When I met Sandy, she had a horse that she stabled at Rushmere. I never had any riding lessons, but I used to ride a little pony and the cart horses as a boy. And Sandy went on holiday and left me to look after this horse at Rushmere. It was just across the road from the Rushmere Heath. So I started off by leading this horse out every day. And I thought, this is silly. Why don't I sit on it? Yes. Well, I led it across the road, and I think I fell off about three times before I got on. But anyhow, it led on, and then we got, so Hanny was hunting, and we bought a thoroughbred horse off an old boy called Tony
Gower.
What was it?
Gower.
Tony Gower, up at Rushmere Way, Coastgrove. And so I started hunting. Well, then, I think I got this right. The mare come after that, didn't she?
Snoddy.
Mm. A friend of mine had a little small holding out there towards Claydon, and he was running his small holding with this nice cob called Snoddy. When he decided he's going to stop doing that, we bought the car, the horse, the cart and the harness. Is that right? All for him. So I got this cob. And then...
That was a tumbrel, wasn't it?
That was a tumbrel, yeah. That was an army tumbrel, which has since rotted away and gone. I was hunting, and so got friendly with Tony Harvey, and he'd got a collection of gypsy wagons, and we used to take our old cob and put it into one of his wagons or into one of his carts and do things. And then we went to a sale. We got, I don't know how many horses we got down, three or four, and we were in at the Broadacres at Westerfield, where we're keeping the horses. And we went to a sale to buy another horse, and Sandy bought that cob up there, Tucker. And the underbidder for that was Rosie Mackman from Swillen, Newton Hall.
Rosie
Theobald. Since Sandy worked for Rosie years ago, they were friends, obviously. Well, we're all friendly. And so Rosie said that if she'd had that, it was going in the Riders' Gulch. So Sandy said, well, you can have it. Is this right? Am I right?
No. What she said is, what had I bought it for? And I said, for you to go hunting on. And that was July time, and she said, well, would there be any chance of her borrowing it? So Tucker went to live at Newton Hall from the July, and he came back home to us in the October.
Yeah.
So we could go hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what year was this? Roughly what year is it?
That had been mid-70s, 75, 76, something like that.
So then we got three horses that we could put harness on. Yeah. So we used to go out with him and Snoddy and go out on these hot gypsy weekends. Well, then, about 1979, Sandy bought a Shire.
He came from Roger, didn't he?
Yeah, Sam.
Sampson.
Oh,
yeah.
And at the same time, Tony Harvey broke that horse to work for us, to drive, and then we bought the Sandy bought the Shire, and so we were, I mean, up, he was ever so quiet, because we had young lads that used to come and mess about with us, and we had the young lad, it would be about, I don't know, 11 or 12 would John be, and he'd put a set of harness on that Shire, and go off through the village with him, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And anyhow, Tony had arranged for this trip to Appleby, and I don't know, but and Tony, as you probably know, used to drink a bit. We owe a lot of our pleasure and our horse knowledge to Tony, but he did drink occasionally, and so I had been known to get him out of a muddle.
Right.
And he'd got this trip all arranged, and about 6 weeks before he was going to go, Sheila, his wife, said, was there any chance I could go to Appleby with him? And I said, well, no, there's reasons for that. I don't want to share a wagon with Tony. And B, I can't afford to. He's 6 weeks away. His pigs were getting fat.
Yes.
But my hands weren't earning nothing. Anyway, it went on a bit, and then we come to an arrangement, thanks to my friend Eric, you know, finance. But I took another wagon with Snoddy. And when we turned up at Tony's in the morning, we're going to start off, he had a real nice old man work for him, who was a real old horseman, called Jack Steele. And he come out in the courtyard, and I can't remember exact words, but that was something like, you take that old mare all that way, you'll kill her.
Right.
But she'd got the mare really, really fit. She'd rid her and driv her and got really fit.
That's when I learnt to drive a horse.
Right, yeah.
Our first trip back to Appleby. Because I started off riding her, and because at the time of year, I couldn't clip her. So my legs were getting ever so wet because she was getting hot.
Yeah.
So then I graduated to putting the harness on and long rein in her. And we'd got a braking cart that hadn't got a seat on it, so I walked behind it. Then I had a piece of plywood on the braking cart and I used to sit on it, and then I graduated to putting her in the cart and driving.
Right.
But yeah, she was very fit. And one day I was driving her, and this is 1980, so the traffic was a lot different. But I used to drive her up past the fire station on Colchester Road and go round the block and come back down Humber Ducey Lane. And I went over the kennels, and Jimmy Wickham said to me, that must have been you, Sandy. He said, somebody come to see me today. And they said, you'll never guess, I just seen a girl driving a horse on a bypass. But that was just how you could do it.
Yeah.
But that mare was just so quiet. She was you needed to know what you were doing to handle her. But she was so good at what she'd done.
Yeah.
And when he was on his trip to Appleby, we've got cine film of her in the middle of three lanes of traffic.
In York.
She was absolutely incredible.
Yeah. How long did it take?
We was 17 days travelling, but we rested one day. Because the day we went up, we did between 9 and 27 miles a day, because Tony had worked it out lovely.
Yeah.
He'd worked out that him and Sheila had gone off weekends, and Sheila had driven him, and he'd worked out where the stops were. Was there water for the horses? Was there grazing for the horses? Was there human water?
Yeah.
Could we have a fire? And so on. So he'd worked out, I said, the minimum we done was 9 miles, and the most we done in one day was 27. And that's a long time ago, but I think you'll find we stopped on the roadside, going up and coming back, except on 3 occasions. We stayed on 2 farms. One of them was in Guyern, is it? Yeah. And we stopped on a caravan site in Hawes. And the morning, we'll jump a bit, the morning we were coming back in June, we always used to start in the mornings out on the route of 4, that was daylight really.
Yeah.
And that morning the tethering chains were thrust to the ground in June.
So that's quite an experience for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that was marvellous. Marvellous. We've been to Appleby 4 times altogether, ain't we?
Yeah,
we went to that trip. I think we did we 4 or 3 times.
3 times. We stayed up once, and his plan was to get away from everything, and there'd be no dogs and no kids and no nagging woman.
Yeah, he'd gone on a trip.
When he was going on his trip. And he'd only been away one day, and this was before we had a mobile phone, and I had three different messages come home. If I was going that way, could I take him a bag of oats for his horse and his little dog?
There's pictures somewhere the little dog asleep. Yeah,
and once when I went up, because I had to stay at home, look after the children and run things here, but once when I went up to visit, I've got a lovely photograph of our little Jack Russell Jenny sitting in the suitcase, because I used to go up there and change the clothes over. So I was putting all the stuff in the suitcase, and this little dog got in the suitcase and think I'd had enough of the grumpy man.
As we started off to go to Alby, Sandy went and done a pageant in Christchurch Park with Shire. And come out in Soane Street and drove them home again, didn't I?
So how did you get involved with Suffolk then, Tom? I mean, that was a natural progression.
Because the hunting horses... first of all, we took them to Hector Moore at Brandeston used to shoe them. And then Hector got so he didn't want to be doing so much. And I took my horses then to Roger. And we then became friendly with Roger and Cherry. And then Tom used to go out with Cherry with the horses to show the horses.
Right.
And he'd travel with her, you see, because he'd drive the lorry.
Yes.
With the sometimes the trailer on the back. Right. And so that's how we got involved with the Suffolks. And then Roger came up with this really good idea that if we had a young Suffolk, because we couldn't afford to buy a made Suffolk, if we bought a young Suffolk off of Roger, and then when that was going, sometimes he could borrow it to go in the team.
Right.
That was the plan.
Oh, I see.
The plan backfired because the young Suffolk was too spirited for us. He was all right. I got him going on. I had a little girl, Karen, that used to help me. And we started him off and he'd been in the harness and we'd long reined him. And he went over to Cherry's for Cherry to put him into a vehicle and onto the chains. And when I went to pick him up, she just said to me, just be a bit careful with him, he's a bit sharp. Now, he was never any bother to Karen and I. But when Tom had got him out, he was sharp. And the dog came through, because the dog used to come with us when we were exercising. And the dog came through a ditch and spooked the horse. And the horse went off and Tom came out of the back of the car.
Right.
So Tom wouldn't drive him anymore.
That's fair enough.
So, but then that all turned out to our advantage because Roger took him back and then he phoned Tom one day to say... Oh, no, Tom was there one day and he came out and said that Dick Porter, the slaughter man, had had this old Suffolk mare taken in to be put down and he didn't deem that that was bad enough, you know, that was sound, that was moving about and all right, and he didn't think that was right to send it off for meat. And had Roger got anybody in mind that could do with it? And so we actually managed to swap the young horse for the old horse.
I see.
And the old horse was Colony Nectar, right. So she'd been born and brought up properly.
Yeah.
You know, she'd had all the groundwork when she was at Hoseley. She'd had a couple of foals. They sold her when Hoseley Bay had a sale. And she went down to live on some marshes somewhere, and she should have been in foal, but there's no record of her having that foal. And then when we went into trying to breed her after we'd had her for a little while, there was something a bit amiss, and she couldn't conceive anymore. Mm. But for a working horse, she was absolutely fantastic. Because, you know, I could do things with her around the yard. You could drop the rope and go off in the caravan and make a cup of tea. She just was absolutely... But you couldn't lead her without a bit in her mouth.
Right.
You could, but she'd make a fool of you. Because you'd be halfway doing something you wanted to be doing... And Nellie decided she'd turn around and go the other way, and turn around and go the other way she would. But if you'd got a bit in a mess, she never argued with you.
We pulled one of Tony Harvey's big wagons in the Suffolk show ring with her, don't we? We've done several pageants with our cobs and our horses. And that picture up there, which you can't see very well, but Tony Harvey organised a drive. He wanted 100 vehicles on Fram Castle Midder, having been driven from their base. Yeah. And we sent 4 turnouts to that.
Could that have been 1987?
I don't know. Well, it was. Anyhow, yeah. I left Westerfield at we must have been at the...
We were at Walnut Tree.
Walnut Tree. Oh, I left at 5 o'clock with old Mayor, and doing what Sandy just said, we got to the turn and before you get the Jebbies Post. What's it called, the lane?
Baker's Lane.
Anyhow, don't matter. Mm. I sort of eased up to talk to a bloke who was waiting to come out of the road, and the next thing I knew, was coming back towards Ipswich. Anyhow, I went there with the Mayor and the Suffolk, and my son drove a black cob we got then. Andrea drove that little Shetland, and Sandy had a hell of a good horse. I can't see a picture of him now. Reese, Welsh cob. We're getting this all mixed up, but that don't matter. We went to Leslie Miller and Sandy went to Wales on holiday.
1975.
And then they decided they want to have Welsh cobs. So we set off, Leslie, Sandy, myself, and my boy Jim, who was a teenager then, in an old TK that did 45 mile an hour, and went to the sales in Wales. And they bought 2 Welsh colts, 2 colts, you know, a colt and a filly, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Leslie had the filly and Sandy had the colt. Anyhow, Reese, really good horse. And Roger, so to get our 4th one there, we left that all ready for Roger.
He was still there, wasn't
huh?
I was there. That's why I didn't drive.
Yes, well, anyhow.
I was there getting everything ready to go. I was there at Abbotsford to send you off, so you were ready to go at 5. Then I was there with Jim and Andrea, and then I waited until Roger got there, and we put Reese to, and Reese got to Framlingham before the others. And Roger said if he'd have known how fit he was, he'd have driven him from home.
Yeah, yeah.
And he'd been somewhere to his sister's for a cup of tea, hadn't he?
Yeah, he stopped somewhere.
He'd stop for a cup of tea on the way.
Dear.
But them days we had some private driving carts and that. Yeah. We had a carriage and we used to do weddings with Snoddy and with Tucker.
I've got to say about Reese, because I had Reese 30 years, and I am terribly proud of him.
Yes.
You know, he was an absolutely incredible cob. But I had him from when he was 6 months old until he was 30. And Tony Harvey helped me when I wanted to have him broken to drive. And when I went over there to pick him up, to bring him home, he said to me, "What are you going to do with this cob now?" And I said, "I'm going to turn him back out on the meadow now." And he looked at me as if I was really an imbecile. But he did desperately try to buy him off me. He was only 3, and I thought he needed to go out. And we got him in again when he was 4. But so that October, Tony Harvey went to Wales and bought a lorry load of colts home. And it must have been 5 or 6. But he never ever had one, and he said so, never had one that was half the man that mine was.
Yes.
He was just an incredible little horse. Everything I wanted to do with him, I have.
So what kept you interested in Suffolk?
In the Cherry Roger days, I used, as well as go on the shows with Cherry as her assistant and her driver, I used to do a lot of work on the farm over there. The videos that Paul Heine made. Oh, I helped to train Paul Heine and so on.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one of my things that I used to do, help Roger. And that was on one particular day, I went into lunch, and like Sandy said, and he said about this mare, and I said, "I ought to go and look at her." And he said, "You don't need to be here tomorrow." And the next time day I went into dinner, he'd say, "That mare's here, go and chuck a bit of, you know, Roger, don't you? Go and chuck a bit of harness on her and take her out." And I did, and she came home and lived with us. And I won the, we won the proper working cartless competition for him. Then when you had to leave the horse and load the cart.
Yes.
Open the gate while the horse stood, shut the gate while the horse stood, unload the cart, that proper working horse. Yeah. And I won that 4 years on the trot with her.
Yeah.
So that's got us back into Suffolk. Then Dennis Holland from Lavenham, dear old man, had got a Suffolk called Milden Winter Star, an ex-Phil Morley horse that wouldn't breed. And he got, he's a friend of Roger's, and he said that he had this horse broken and he used to ride it about the farm and drive it. And he said to Roger, do you know anybody who might make use of this, have it on loan? So Roger put him in touch with me, and the old man come and see us, dear little old man. And he come and see us and said, "Yeah, all right, you can have her." And so then I had Nellie and Star.
Right.
And Nellie got so, although we were still doing things with her, she was a bit arthritic. So in the morning you'd have to go and just give her a hand to get up.
Yeah,
I used to go and put my knee in her shoulder and give her a little push to get up. But then we lost Nellie. And then a lady in, I think, Leicestershire, that's that picture up there, had got this mare that she was breeding thoroughbreds, but she'd got a Suffolk mare, which we knew nothing about, and she'd been in touch with the Suffolk Horse Society, and they put her in touch with us, and she said that she was prepared to loan this mare to someone who could do work, use it. So I said, "We'd better come and look at it." "No need for that," she said. "We'll bring her down for you to see. We'd love to come to Suffolk. We'll bring her down." Well, they turned up in our yard at Walnut Tree Farm this morning, this posh lorry, and they opened the target. I said, Sandy, come and look at this." Of course, she was a cracking mare, but they'd sent her down south. I won't make no names. They'd sent her down south for a Suffolk stud, 2 years running, spent thousands of pounds on vets bills and so on, and keep, and eventually the second year got a letter from Bet saying this mare will not breed, so she didn't want her anymore. But so we had her on loan. Right, now I'll try and get this right. Sandy was out. I'm not into showing, because I don't need a man to bowl hat to tell me what he think I got, because what I got is what I take on.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But Sandy liked the show, and I support her best I can, and she was out with a mare somewhere. I can't remember where now. But Bruce Smith said, "Cool, where'd that mare come? Ain't she know before? Where's she come from? Of course, she's a cracker mare, is he?" So Sandy said, yeah, and told the story. So he said, "Why ain't you been showing her?" So Sandy said, "Well, you know, Tom ain't too keen on showing and so on." "Well, you ought to breed her." So Sandy told him a story, and I think his words were something like, "Let us be the judge of that."
Yes, yeah.
And she went to Hoseley 4 times. Not 4 consecutive years, but 4 times, and come back in full 4 times. And when we rung the lady up to tell her, the next thing was they were here with that photograph and all the paperwork and gave it to us.
That's
so
nice.
We've never, and when Dennis Holland died, his family gave us Star, so we've never spent any money on these Suffolks, not to buy them.
But you won't say we haven't ever spent any money on them.
No. But the first foal that Gertie had is the mare Daisy that we breed now.
That's the mare that his picture is there.
Oh, yes, yeah.
The second foal, then we got, I don't know if you know, but we kept the Trinity.
Oh, yes, I saw them.
We kept the Trinity.
Both, yes. Yeah.
Right. And we should produce that for the Suffolk Agriculture Association.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like Hadley's Show, South Suffolk Show, Hetendring Show, and the Harvest Festival at Bury. Until that got so difficult to get permission to take Clovenhoof animals out, that's what we've done.
Yeah.
Anyhow, Mr. Bushby summoned me to go to the showground. And he said that next year, the Queen's coming to Suffolk.
No, that isn't what he said.
What did he say?
He said in July, he told us a date, and it was July, and it was a secret.
Uh-huh.
It was a secret. No one knew what was happening.
Right.
But he booked us to take a horse to Bury.
So we went to meet the Queen with this horse, mare in foal, right? For a second foal. We were in an avenue of outside the Estes, what's the big hall? Anyway, that big hall near the Angel Hotel, opposite the cathedral, big hall, and a car park. And they'd put two rows of tents or, you know, put cameras up. We were in the first one here, and we got Mrs. Kerr with us, because she was president of the Suffolk Horse Society then, and one or two other people from Suffolk Horse Society here. And when they came out, the royalties, the Queen and Chris Bushby came our side, and John Kerr and the Duke went t'other side. Now, I'd never met the Queen. I'm not being big-headed, I'm on personal terms with Anne, and I've known her to leave the official party to come and talk to me when she shouldn't have done. But I never met the Queen. I met Charlie. And so on. Anyhow, the Queen come to us, ever so nervous. She come to us, picture somewhere, in another room, I think. We talk, wonder how I get involved and so on. And she kept patting the man, say, what a beautiful beast. And so I filled her in the best I could and told her what we'd done and we normally do and so on. And I said to her, perhaps that was time she had Suffolk. Because her father had some, had a good start at Sandring, I can't remember the exact words. I said, the Galahan's got one, and Charlie's got two, you ought to have some. Anyhow, she went carried on her way. Well, Mrs. Kerr said, words to the effect, don't relax, because although they're supposed to meet down the other end and go to a children's recital or something, I'm not surprised if John won't bring Prince Philip this way. But he didn't have to, because when Prince Philip got the other end, he said something like to John Kerr, I see my missus talking to a Suffolk horse, I'd like to. And so he come back and talked to us. Well, we didn't know what was going on. No one ever told us, but apparently there's lots of letters going backwards and forwards between the Horse Society and the Queen's Equine. And eventually, we were at the foal's born, and we were at the Newmarket National Stud, was it?
No, we went to a special race day that was a countryside day, and we went to represent Rare Breed, and we took the mare and the foal for a Rare Breed, to be on a stand as a Rare Breed.
Yes, right. And then Roger come over and said what a good foal it was and that, and then he said that the breed committee... Was it for sale? Well, our things ain't for sale until we know where they're going to go. My governor see out of that. And Sandy said, well, it could be, subject to us knowing about it. He said, well, the breed committee have been asked, the Queen had agreed to accept the gift of a filly, and the breeding committee had been asked to select one. Would she be available? So Sandy said, well, yeah, on that, could you? And he said, well, there is a problem, you'll have to keep her longer. So Sandy said, fair enough. So eventually that was chosen to go, and we delivered it to Hampton Court in December, didn't we?
Yes.
To, to Hampton Court. Oh. And that's now at Eastern Farm Park.
Right.
A Swit and Poppy.
Right.
So that was the second foal.
Yeah.
And they're still owned by the Queen.
Yeah, still owned by the Queen. I just wonder if the members realise that they donated money to buy a horse for the Queen.
Yeah.
We believe that that's had other homes before that come to Easton. I mean, that's got a bloody good home at Easton. And I have spent a couple of days recently there with her, talking to the public about how it all happened.
Yes.
Right, now, our third foal was George, wasn't it?
Yes.
The third full girl he had was George, and that went to live in Essex, didn't it?
That went to live with...
I don't matter. I went to live in Essex.
Yeah, but right. He's right successful. George isn't successful, because unfortunately George had problems and eventually died when he was about 3 or 4. But the man... Is it Sirrett's farm or something?
Oh, Neil Sirrett's.
No. He's got a shire as well. Glencass.
Oh, Glencass.
Bought George. Right, and George was the first Suffolk that he had.
Right, yeah.
And now when he sees Hazel and John out with their Suffolks, Suffolks are so much of a type. You know, you can tell that they're related. And, you know, he says it always brings a lump to his throat. Because not only are they a type to look at, they're a type in character and, you know, they're just kind.
Yes, yeah. So what's your present state with Suffolks? I mean,
now,
the holding you had went, didn't it? Because I remember coming to the holding.
Yeah.
So,
well, I had this idea that when I was 65, I was going to stop working. So the man who owned the place that we were renting wanted to have some sort of fixed date about when I was going to give up. So I said to him, well, in 2012, I'll be 65, Tom will be nearly 80, we'll have to be given up then, so I'll relinquish the lease then. Yeah. And then it got closer to the date, and I really felt that I could carry on working and keep the horses. And we've been ever so lucky, in as much as there's been a lot of local folk that have been very helpful in helping
us
keep them.
Yeah, because you were very upset, weren't you, at the time?
Yeah,
when I came to look at the trolley, you remember?
We've got some really good friends, yes. Jeremy Hall over at Aitkenham. He helps with
grass.
He's
got some permanent grass pasture.
Lovely.
Park and that, which he lets.
So he let them go on there last winter. We have got stabling and a little tiny paddock at Westerfield. And then partridges at Westerfield.
Nice.
Have them summertime. Yeah. And at the moment they're in a partridge... Well, the mare and the foal and the two-year-old are in cattle yards at Partridges. Because that's just so wet.
So hopefully the future then, just to sort of wind down a little bit, the future, you're still going to keep horses.
Joy Partridge has been a lot of help to us this year.
Yeah.
And because I like to show, and I really think that the foals need to go out and see. And I ever so gingerly said to Joy, if I entered for the Suffolk show, would she come and help me? And she thought about it and then said, well, could she have a practice before she committed herself?
Mm-hmm.
So, but our Daisy, the first foal that we ever bred, she is just so good that it's incredible, really.
Mm-hmm.
Joy is used to horses, but not great big ton horses. And we came and she trotted her up and down the farm track to see whether or not she could trot up and down. And then she said, yes, she would come. And so, you know, we shoe the mare and the foal. And what Joy has recently said to me is, because you've got to cut down, I can't keep everything, so one of the youngsters has got to go. But the foal is a really cracking foal, so we're thinking of parting with a two-year-old. And she said to me, you won't ever sell Daisy, will you? Daisy can't go anywhere. So it looks as if Daisy's safe.
Yeah.
We ought to go back to our breeding, if you don't mind.
Yes, okay,
right.
Yeah.
The first foal we had born was Daisy.
Right.
And I think she's now had 5 foals.
Yes.
We were at the mouse racing with Eastern Harriers. Sandy used to run the mouse racing at night and run fun race for Eastern Harriers. And we were there one night, and I was emceeing. And I just got on, we knew we got a foal deal. We left my son Jimmy.
That was Daisy's first foal, that was.
Yeah.
Daisy's first foal, not Daisy. We were both there when Daisy was born.
Yeah, right. Daisy's first foal. I was just about to make... We left Jim in charge, because Jim isn't 100% into horses,
but
he'll help.
That's your son, is it? That's your son.
My son. He'll help. If I need him, he'll help. Like, we had a day out last week and he looked after the animals all the day. Left him in charge. I just got on the stage with my microphone to make an announcement and my phone rang. I said, I'm sorry, but I've got to answer this. That's important. And that was Jim to say, we got a foal. And John and Hazel were there. John Latham is Lord Blakenham's manager and Hazel's his partner, and Hazel's got riding horses. And they decided more or less then that they was going to buy that foal.
They came to see it, didn't they, at 12 o'clock at night, after we'd come away from the mares racing.
Lovely, yes.
We went to, you know, so they could see this foal.
Well, just a little while later, Jim phoned again and he said, that's a filly.
Right, yeah.
And that's the mare Violet they got. And the next... Where did Star come in on that?
Further down. The next foal she had...
Was Hector.
Was Star.
Was Star, yeah.
Yes, because unfortunately, the next time we had mares in foal, we'd got Daisy's mother Gertie in foal and Daisy at the same time. And Gert had problems and we lost the mare and the foal. So we lost Gert and a new foal. And then Daisy was due a month after that. And then Daisy had Star. And the reason we called Star Star was that we'd lost Gertie and Star in the same year and within a month of one another, and that very nearly finished both of us. Because Gertie, we struggled with for a long while and tried to keep her going, and then she went down and we lost her and her baby. And then it might have only been days after that, Tom went over the yard one morning to feed, and his Star was dead in the stable. And they've been together, the two Suffolks had lived together ever since we'd had both of them. And we do just wonder if she just knew that her friend wasn't there.
I had a pair of dogs, they were twins, and when the dog died at 13, the bitch just pined away, you see.
We didn't notice that Star was ill.
No.
But it was just that, you know, that was as if she knew.
Just as if she'd...
And so we called the new foal Golden Star, so she got,
So what?
She lived
then the third, the next foal was Hector.
Yeah.
Right.
Which John and Hazel snapped up straight away. And the fourth foal...
was Teasel.
Teasel.
Yeah. And John and Hazel bought him.
They grabbed him. I presume you know of them. They are three cracking horses.
Yes. Yeah. See,
going back to Poppy.
Those three
Roger
horses.
Clark rung up one day and he said, I've just done the show on at Easton. Has a mare there, a cracking mare. He said, someone said, that's the one you let go to the Queen. Yeah. What's she doing here? Well, we don't know, you see.
No,
we didn't know about it.
No.
But the thing is, and although Sandy's worked hard to earn the money, we haven't spent great money.
Not on getting them, have we?
We've probably spent more on looking after them than the average person do.
Yeah, yeah.
But we hadn't got no background. Well, I think we've done incredibly well.
Yes. Let's leave it like that.